Welcome to Whiskey Cask, Cask Strength Conversation, featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 488 for July 18th, 2014. Coming up in a few minutes.
The main thing we want to do is make sure people know it's not just a collector's item. And that's what, another thing we were afraid of. Okay, this is a little gimmicky or it's a novelty. So we have a campaign that is, if it's got my name on it, it's damn sure good enough for you. And we use that campaign to reinforce the quality of the product in the bottle. And this is something to be consumed, not collected.
Michael Howard helped create one of what might be called celebrity whiskeys, the J.R. Ewing bourbon named for the legendary character on the TV show Dallas. With the lawsuit over a John Wayne-branded bourbon in the news recently, I thought it might be fun to hear from the entrepreneurs behind this trend. We'll also get the story behind the Ron Burgundy Scotch whiskey from Ed Kahn of Riviera Imports, and you won't believe what Paramount Pictures originally wanted to name that whiskey. I'll also have the calendar of events, this week's Your Voice, and a look at summer whiskey cocktails, all on this week's Whiskey Cast.
Whiskey Cast. Proudly brought to you by Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Join the stillhouse at singlepotstill.com.
As always, let's begin with the week's news. It's brought to you by Glenmorangie. In a story we reported first on Thursday at WhiskeyCast.com, the sale of White & Mackay to billionaire Andrew Tan's Alliance Global Holdings could receive final approval from UK regulators within weeks. The Competition and Markets Authority has given preliminary approval to the $724.5 million deal and has opened up a two-week public comment period before issuing a final approval. Diageo and its United Spirits unit in India, which owns White & Mackay, were forced by the former Office of Fair Trading to sell off the Scotch Whiskey and Gin unit in order to get approval for Diageo's acquisition of United Spirits. Regulators were concerned that merging the White & Mackay blended Scotch business into Diageo's blended Scotch business would reduce competition. There is still one final hurdle to clear. The Reserve Bank of India must sign off on the sale, since the terms call for loans from United Spirits to Vijay Mallya's USL holding company to be written off. You can get more details and a link to the entire agreement in the news section at WhiskeyCast.com. Several weeks ago, I mentioned the zoning battle in Fort Worth, Texas, where the owners of the Firestone and Robertson Distillery are trying to build a new distillery on the grounds of the historic and financially troubled Glen Garden Country Club. Tuesday night, Fort Worth's City Council voted 9-2 in favor of a zoning change to allow the distillery over the objections of many of the club's neighbors and the council's member from that district. The Fort Worth Star-Telegram reports the hearing lasted around 2 hours, and at least one protester was ejected from the council chambers. Distillery owners Leonard Firestone and Troy Robertson pledged to minimize any impact on the neighborhood, including rerouting traffic to keep distillery visitors out of residential areas and preserve green space within 200 feet of the property line. The golf course has been on that site since 1912, and golf legends Byron Nelson and Ben Hogan worked as caddies at Glen Garden before making their own history in golf. Earlier this year, Diageo announced plans for the new Hague Club single grain Scotch whiskey, created in collaboration with soccer star David Beckham and entertainment mogul Simon Fuller. Hague Club went on sale this week at Selfridges in London. The single grain from Cameron Bridge Distillery near Edinburgh will sell for £45, or about $78 a bottle. Selfridges will have it exclusively until July 28th, when it will go on sale at the Whiskey Shops Piccadilly store in London, followed by other whiskey specialist shops. Hague Club will eventually be available in the U.S. and other global markets, but no details have been released on the timing yet. Meanwhile, Irish Distillers has released the annual edition of Middleton Very Rare. It's the 31st annual release of the blended Irish whiskey, and for the first time, Barry Crockett's signature does not appear on the label. Of course, Barry retired last year, and Brian Nation is now the master distiller at Middleton. It's his signature that appears on the bottle for the first time. The 2014 edition will be available at whiskey retailers in Ireland, the U.S., and selected global markets. No word yet on pricing. Now that the World Cup is over, the next big event on the horizon is the Commonwealth Games, which get underway in Glasgow next week with athletes from 71 countries. The famous grouse is the official whiskey of the 2014 Games and is releasing a limited edition single malt from Glenturret Distillery to mark the occasion. Glenturret is the home of the famous grouse experience. The whiskey comes from casks filled back in 1986, which just happened to be the last time the Games were held in Scotland. It'll be available in the UK for £150 or $257 a bottle. Glendronic doesn't need a special occasion to release a batch of single cask bottlings. The distillery released its 10th batch of single cask malts this week, all ex-sherry casks ranging in age from 12 to 24 years old, and all nine bottled at cask strength. No word yet on pricing. There's another competitor in the race to out-fireball Fireball Cinnamon Whiskey. This one comes from Jim Beam, which is rolling out Jim Beam Kentucky Fire next month. Technically, it's not a whiskey since it's bottled at 35% ABV, but is labeled as Kentucky Straight Bourbon Whiskey infused with cinnamon liqueur. Look for a bit of blowback on the labeling, though, since Brown-Forman has been test marketing a Jack Daniel's Tennessee Fire cinnamon-flavored version for several months now. And finally, the finishing touches are being put on Adelphi's new Ardnamurchan Distillery near Glenbeg on Scotland's west coast. The official grand opening is set for next Friday. Remember, you can keep up with the latest whiskey news all week long at whiskeycast.com.
The news is brought to you by Glenmorangie. Coming soon, the whiskey you help pick. Our Castmaster selection, Glenmorangie Tacta. Glenmorangie, unnecessarily well made.
The Open Championship is in full swing this weekend at Royal Liverpool in England, and you have until the final putt on Sunday to register at whiskeycast.com as a member to become eligible to win a Glenmorangie Open Championship golf package. I'll pick a winner at random from our registered members to receive a tailor-made fairway wood, duffel bag, Open Championship golf balls, and a Glenmorangie Open Championship golf cap. It's free to sign up, and we promise not to spam you or give your email address to anyone else. You can register in the pub section at whiskeycast.com. I'll announce the winner on next week's episode. This week's Your Voice is brought to you by Johnny Walker, and we're starting to get a bunch of tasting notes now in the Summer Whiskey Challenge. The latest ones came from Linda Rufinock in Louisville, who did not post notes on a bourbon, but on the Defiant Rye and the one and only Buckwheat whiskeys from the Catskill Distilling Company in upstate New York. Lilith Morgan posted her tasting notes from Brisbane, Australia, and she did pick a bourbon, Angel's Envy Cask Strength. We have a bunch of people posting tweets on what they're tasting, but remember, it doesn't count until you post your notes on the Summer Whiskey Challenge page at whiskeycast.com. A few weeks ago, I tweeted out a photo of Pete, the kitten that has taken on the role of distillery cat at Glenturret Distillery in Scotland. Of course, that turned out to be probably one of the most popular tweets I've ever sent, and since then I've been getting plenty of photos of distillery cats. I still don't know quite what it is with the internet and cats to begin with, but be that as it may, the guys at Finger Lakes Distilling in New York tweeted me a photo Friday of what may be the perfect distillery mascot, a turtle that stumbled onto the grounds, along with the hashtag slow and steady. Elijah Leone in Oakland, California has been going back through the early episodes of Whiskey Cast. He tweeted out the other day that, quote, listening to the history of whiskey news updated weekly has been amazing. But he also noted that the lead story in episode 36 was so sad that it made him pull over. That was way back in 2006 when Pernod Ricard announced plans to close the old Seagram's distillery in Lawrenceburg, Indiana, and cut 400 jobs. Since I've already told Elijah this on Twitter, it's not a spoiler alert, but the distillery never did actually close down. Instead, it was sold to the employees and renamed as Lawrenceburg Distillers, Inc., which is known now industry-wide as LDI. Even though the distillery was eventually sold to MGP Ingredients of Kansas a couple of years ago and renamed once again. Elijah wanted to know more about Seagram's, the Four Roses connection, and where to find out more about the history of American distilling. Well, Seagram's also owned the Four Roses Distillery in Lawrenceburg, Kentucky for many years. And that led to a very interesting tweet from @SegramS on Twitter, quoting now, "And it all started way, way back in Waterloo, Canada in 1857, J.E. Seagram." Note the Twitter handle, SegramS, or Seagrams. Turns out that that's the handle of one Stephanie Seagram, the great-great-granddaughter of J.E. Seagram. You never know who you'll run into on the internet these days. If you run into someone interesting and want to share the news with whiskey lovers around the world, you can always post it on the Your Voice page at WhiskeyCast.com, and you can follow me on Twitter and Facebook at WhiskeyCast. My email address for your questions and suggestions is comments@WhiskeyCast.com. This week's Your Voice is brought to you by Johnny Walker on the web at JohnnyWalker.com. Time now for the calendar of events brought to you as always by Laphroaig. McTeers will hold its next whiskey auction on Wednesday in Glasgow, and the weekly summer whiskey tasting that night at Dufton's Commercial Hall in the heart of Speyside features Angus Dundee whiskeys. The Scotch Malt Whiskey Society's UK chapter has preview tastings next Friday night in Durham, Stirling, Birmingham, and Harrogate. The Australian Malt Whiskey Tasting Championship is next Saturday night in Sydney. Whiskey Fringe is coming up August 8th through the 10th in Edinburgh, Scotland. And the Filson Historical Society's next bourbon dinner is August 12th at Porcini in Louisville. Those are just a few of the 209 different events on the calendar right now at WhiskeyCast.com. There's bound to be one near you. The calendar of events is brought to you by Laphroaig. Share your opinion on Laphroaig's uniquely complex whiskeys at Laphroaig.com/opinions or use the hashtag on social media, OpinionsWelcome.
WhiskeyCast, brought to you by Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. In conversation with Billy Lighton, Master Blender, Redbreast Single Pot Still Irish Whiskey.
Redbreast is a reflection of Irish whiskey as it used to be and always should be, in that it reflects the pot still style, which is the tradition of Irish whiskey going back over the years. And if you take Redbreast, there's an age statement on the label, 12 years old, and that means that the youngest whiskey in that bottle is 12 years old. Doesn't mean that all the whiskey's 12 years old, because to get the mix right and the style, all the flavour characteristics right, we will use a range of ages, the youngest being 12. But, you know, it can be a few years older in that to get the whole thing together as I want it to be.
Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Those in the know, no Redbreast.
Last time around, I mentioned the legal showdown between John Wayne's children and Duke University, in which the family-owned company that holds the late actor's licensing rights is suing the university over the right to use the word Duke for commercial purposes. John Wayne Enterprises is trying to launch Duke Bourbon using the actor's well-known nickname, but the university has fought the family's attempts to use Duke for years, claiming it would diminish the value of the university's own trademarks on the word Duke, and in this case, cause people to think the university was linked to the bourbon. We've had several celebrity-inspired whiskeys hit the market in recent years, and I thought it might be interesting to hear the stories behind the two most recent ones, both named for movie and TV characters, but not showing the actors who made those characters famous. The third season of the revived Dallas TV series is underway now on TNT in the U.S., along with networks in other countries. The show's legendary villain, J.R. Ewing, died last year, along with the actor who portrayed him for years, Larry Hagman. But the Ewing name lives on in a new bourbon from Prairie Creek Beverages in Dallas. Michael Howard is the company's president, and the bourbon's backstory involves Dallas cast members and Bennett Glazier, who runs one of the country's largest liquor distributors based in Dallas.
Bennett Glazier is friends with several people on the cast, and they thought about this for many years. So I do business with Glazier's, and then my ad agency, Levinson Group, has Warner Brothers as one of their clients. So in talking about this, myself, Levinson Group, and a couple of other investors decided, why don't we try to bring this to life? And in my background is brand development, so I was on the industry side Levinson being on the branding and positioning side, and started looking for bourbon. And it took approximately 9 months to find a large enough quantity and the type of bourbon we were looking for. So from that, we decided to form a group called South Fork Bottling Company, which we actually have to pay to use rights from that as well. But we created South Fork Bottling Company and decided to go about then trying to produce the product. Garnered the raw bourbon and then started working on the packaging. And Prairie Creek is the master distributor, if you will, for North America for the brand. And then became, once we finalized packaging, once we got Warner Brothers to sign off on it, then Prairie Creek took over more of the industry aspects of it. We use a great blender who had the same attitude about making a final product that we did. So that helped a lot, and we were able to find, like I said, the origin of the juice is 89% corn and 11% rye, and we really wanted to find some with a little bit of that rye in there, Mark, just so it gives it a, you know, a little touch of sweetness and a little bit of toast on the end. So the profile fit what we wanted to do. What we were really trying to look at is make sure that we found something that fit JR's character and would meet a bourbon purist standpoint of it. I'm a little bit older, and thinking of a straight Kentucky bourbon, I think of it as being something 4 years, corn, new age, and from Kentucky. So we really wanted to, there was some thought by Warner Brothers to do something in a Texas whiskey, but we just felt like that if JR, who Larry Hagman and the character actually drank bourbon, we felt like, number one, to have any credibility, we had to get juice that was authentic. And then number two, the show today that's on currently has more of a 20-something-year-old following. And we also felt like that if we were going to widen this demographic of bourbon, that we wanted to have something that was smooth, a little lighter, and I mean lighter in terms of proof, than some of the bourbons that are 45% ABV. It had a little touch of creaminess or sweetness to it. So from that, that's kind of where this whole thing originated from, and away we went.
Now, how hard was it to get Warner Brothers to sign off on this? Obviously, you had some connections through cast members, but how hard was it to get them to sign off?
It was hard, and it's very expensive, too. Levinson Group, our ad agency, fortunately had a long-standing relationship with Warner Brothers as an ad agency, so that gained us a little bit of credibility. Fortunately, they do have a in-depth licensing department. They've just never done anything in this space before. So the difficulty was not so much the access, was crafting a contract that they felt comfortable with. That did take a while. And also protecting the image that they have built on JR. And I, little things like us going and spending a lot of time on the bottle to make it a duplicate or replica of the decanter that he drank from on the show, the signature, the branding of the product. So Levinson did a really good job of anticipating what they wanted from a branding standpoint. So that helped a lot as well. But yes, it was difficult.
Did you have to deal with the Hagman estate at all? I noticed that you're not using him in any of the actual point of sale, the website, any of those marketing campaign issues. So I'm assuming that either you didn't have to or you chose not to involve the family.
We chose not to involve the family first. First of all, we wanted to make sure and get established the name JR and make it more along the lines of that fictional character. That doesn't preclude us not to doing something with the Hagman estate later on. And I think we might be in a better position if the brand takes off. You know, to be honest with you, what we wanted to do is make sure that we got the juice right and the packaging right before we went further than the Warner Brothers relationship.
And also using younger actors and on the website is geared towards the actual current iteration of the show and the audience it's hitting, right?
That's exactly right. And also, we felt like that it mirrored, that audience of the show mirrored that new consumer in whiskey and bourbon. So we felt like there was a really good demographic to cross-pollinate. I would love to tell you that we're marketing geniuses, but what's happened is because the bourbon is authentic and it has this really deep Kentucky roots, we are appealing to the person who knows who JR is and has a strong affinity for the show back from the 80s, and that 50-year-old, so to speak. And then because the juice is a little lighter and it's got a little bit of nice orange acidity on the back end, and we are appealing to that 20-something consumer. We've by accident, we're appealing to two different good demographics within a bourbon category.
Did you work out a deal for product placement on the show on the new episodes that are coming out this year?
The product is extremely integrated in there, and a part of our royalties on the brand includes the product being integrated. So it was the royalties were very aggressive, but that was a part of the royalty structure.
How are sales going, and where do you go from here?
You know, the sales are going really well right now. We thought we'd do about 6,000 cases in 12 months, and we've done 6,000 cases in about 90 days. We're just now adding. We're in approximately 23 states. We should be in 30 states by the first couple of weeks of August. What we're doing now is not only reinforcing that distributor network, but we're also gaining a little bit of on-premise traction. We're going to be going into Del Frisco's, the steakhouse chain, where we've held some events, and really showing the product. JR drank bourbon and branch, which is bourbon and stream water. So first of all, showing the product with the little touch of water in it, how it lightens up, and it's just a beautiful, easy product to drink straight or on a little bit of water, but also showing its flexibility side. The main thing we want to do is make sure people know it's not just a collector's item. And that's what another thing we were afraid of. Okay, this is a little gimmicky or it's a novelty. So we have a campaign that is, if it's got my name on it, it's damn sure good enough for you. And we use that campaign to reinforce the quality of the product in the bottle. And this is something to be consumed, not collected. From a marketing standpoint, that's what we want to do. From an execution standpoint, we want to reinforce our distributors and not only get off-premise distribution, but start getting into quality on-premise distribution.
Since the show has an international following, can you see exporting at some point?
You know, we're already working on that. Now, South Fork does a lot of that. I'm a member of South Fork, but South Fork's already working on Western Europe, Singapore, and you're right, it has amazingly a very strong presence in France and several countries, Portugal, I think, also Asia, and they're already starting to work on that. What we want to do before we expand too far overseas is we want to make sure we got a good handle here, because we don't want to outstrip our supply. We've got a nice residual contract for raw bourbon, which looks really good right now, but if the demand in the U.S. accelerates beyond what our expectations are, then what you don't want to do is start having a supply problem because you've overexpanded in overseas.
Can't tell me where you're getting it, huh?
No, I can't. I wish I could, but the bombing facility is Strong Spirits, and that's where we send the raw bourbon to. They've done a great job. Our master blender is a guy named Henrik Facile, F-A-C-I-L-E, and Henrik has just, like I said, first of all, he helped us with knowing what kind of a mash we want, and helped us from determining and barrel analysis and barrel evaluation, and then he's really hit it on the head. And like I said, Strong Spirits has been wonderful as we blend it and actually bottle it. Truly, the average age, this is what's going to blow you away, the average age is really closer to 5 years old than four. We put four on there because as the five-year-old, the supplies we have now, as that five-year-old gets a little older and starts getting closer to six and changing, and our three and a half and four get a little older, we're going to use those supplies, and hopefully we'll have enough and look at potentially a line extension, maybe something like John Ross's Reserve, or look at something late 2015 and be in a position maybe to do a line extension.
You'll find my tasting notes for the J.R. Ewing Bourbon at whiskeycast.com. Now, Michael Howard and his colleagues took their idea for the J.R. Ewing bourbon to Warner Brothers, but sometimes it works the other way around. If you're like me and have a Twitter keyword for tweets about scotch, you've probably seen someone tweet this catchphrase at least once a day.
I love scotch. I love scotch. Scotchy, scotch, scotch. Here it goes down, down into my belly.
Of course, that's Will Ferrell as Ron Burgundy from the original Anchorman back in 2004. And when Paramount Pictures decided to make a sequel last year, they went straight to Ed Kahn of Riviera Imports. The result? Ron Burgundy Great Odin's Raven Scotch Whiskey. But Ed told me that was not the original name the studio wanted.
They wanted to do a scotch for the second movie. It was the 10th anniversary of the Anchorman series. And they came up with a name called Horny Piper. And I said, no, I don't think that's going to work. I couldn't sell that to anybody in Scotland. And besides, the TTB in the U.S. will not approve the label, so that's not going to work. Why not use Ron Burgundy? And everybody said, Ron Burgundy, Ron Burgundy, we own that trademark. Yeah, that's a good idea. So that's how we got to Ron Burgundy. And the way that Paramount got to us, actually, was through my partners in B.C. and British Columbia, who do a brand called Coyote Ugly, but have been in the celebrity business for a long, long time. And we're the importers of this Canadian whiskey called Coyote Ugly. And they asked whether or not we'd be interested in doing it with them. And I said, let me take a look at it. I talked with my young partner. He said, I don't know. I said, you know what? This is an American icon, and I think it's got some legs. I'm going to do it. So we agreed to do it, and now we had to put a label together. We had to source scotch, and I've been doing this for 46 years, so I'm not a virgin at it. So now I go to call all my friends in the scotch business in Scotland, and lo and behold, I find out most of them are dead. So now what am I going to do? So I went to the people who handle all of our backroom operations who do business in Scotland with a number of their suppliers, and I said, I need a supplier that can make for me a really good whiskey. I want part of it to be single malts and the balance to be grain, and we will put together a blended whiskey, but it will have some back balance. So what we ended up with was a brand that was 30% single malts from different areas in Scotland. And that gave it some body, it gave it some background, and it ended up being a brand that really could compete literally with any whiskey out there. And very, very soon after we began the process, lo and behold, 4 months into it, we sold 15,000 cases of Scotch whiskey, 12-packs. That's 188,000+ bottles that went out to American consumers. And then we started to do this thing in the UK. We did it in Australia. We went to New Zealand with it. And it had more legs, believe it or not, in Australia than it did in the UK. But I suspect that's because we got off to a really late start. The movie had already been released. Keep in mind that the movie was released in the UK and in the US on the 18th of December. So in essence, everybody thought, you know, we did a great job. Chances are, had we had whiskey earlier, we would have done a lot more business. And the whole design of this thing was to put together a whiskey for level entry drinkers who could try scotch, a new scotch, and enjoy it, and buy it at a reasonable price. We pegged it at a suggested resale price to the consumer of $25, which is extremely competitive. We put it in a good package, and we put good whiskey in the bottle. And I think what we got was a lot of repeat on it. I think, frankly, it's starting to soften a bit now, but I think that's not a function of the consumer pickup on it. It's a function of retailers getting the sense, well, the movie's over, let's move on to the next deal.
Does this have legs after the movie goes to Blu-ray discs and DVDs and Netflix and all that? Does this have legs?
Yeah, you get a little resurgence, but at the end of the day, the people that like the whiskey are going to continue to drink it, but you've got a lot of people, because of the character, Ron Burgundy, who are going to buy it as a collectible. And they're probably not going to come back and buy it a second time. Now, we're about to do an Anchorman t-shirt in conjunction with Paramount. They've given us an okay. Of course, they get a royalty on it. But we're going to offer on the internet a reasonably priced t-shirt with Anchorman logo on it and one or two of the sayings that Ron Burgundy says in the movie. Scotchy, scotch, scotch, it goes down so easy. I love it in my belly. I don't know exactly what yet because we've got it out for bid right now, but we're going to try and hook that into some sort of coupon to put it back in retail outlets for the fall season with the hope that consumers will pick the coupon up, get a reduced price on the T-shirt, buy a bottle of Ron Burgundy scotch, and order the T-shirt. So we might get some more life out of it. I think we've gotten more than most brands of this type because we're distributors in New York and we see what happens. This thing is sustainable. There's no question about it. It's not doing the kind of volume it did the first 4 months. I'd be lying to you if I told you it did, but it's still alive. I get probably upwards of 24 emails every day, every other day from consumers around the U.S., in Canada, and some even overseas in the U.K., where can I buy it? I can't seem to find it right now. And what we do is we communicate with every consumer. We thank them for their interest, and we attempt to set them up with a retailer where they can buy the product.
How do you come up with an idea for a brand like this that, as you've suggested, may have a limited shelf life of a year or two based on this movie against coming up with a brand that you hope is going to last for years and years and become an icon?
Well, what you attempt to do is put all the trappings in place that will accomplish that. Point of sale material, good product, reasonable price, advertising, more and more merchandising. You do a T-shirt, and you do what we traditionally do with regular brands in this business, and you try to compete, recognizing that sometimes you're putting money against the wall to attempt to accomplish that, and you're not successful. But my intent with this was really to attract level entry consumers who, because of Ron Burgundy, maybe would pick this up and try it and like it and say, hey, I can drink this. This is good whiskey. So you get some of that, but you definitely get part of your audience really wanting to collect it. I've thousands and thousands of emails. I want to get a bottle for my husband at holiday time so he can keep it on the shelf, things like that. And you know, that's for collectability's sake. So we literally got, because we track it, that in terms of hits on the internet, 533 million hits. Not to mention all the media folks that picked up on it. That was somewhere in the neighborhood of 150, probably $40 or $50 million worth of coverage on this brand. Now, it didn't hurt that Paramount did this Dodge commercial, did Scotchy Scotch ice cream with Tom and Jerry, did a few other things. In fact, I went to them one day because they wanted us to make a contribution to the after party, which took place in New York on the 18th of December, which we attended. We were invited. And they said to me, we want $50,000 from you. And I said to them, hey, guys, look at all the money I put forth. And I said to him, and what have you done? They said, well, we put up $155 million in terms of promotion and advertising. And I shut my mouth because they were right.
So without making it sound like an endorsement, has Will Ferrell actually tried this whiskey? And what did you think of it?
I don't know what he thought of it, but he gave it out to a lot of his friends at holiday time. And I didn't get that from him. I got it from his wife.
The success of Ron Burgundy Scotch has put Ed Kahn's phone number on the speed dial of a bunch of people in Hollywood. He's working on several celebrity-branded spirits projects right now, including a mezcal that could carry Cheech Marin's name. That's Cheech as in Cheech and Chong. You'll find my tasting notes for Ron Burgundy Great Odense Raven at WhiskeyCast.com, and that's this week's Whiskey Cast In Depth. A change of pace this week in the What I'm Tasting This Week department. I was at a Johnny Walker press event in New York City the other night, focusing on summertime whiskey cocktails. Now, I'm normally not a cocktail drinker, but the bartenders that night were mixing up some drinks that showed their whiskey heritage while being light and refreshing on a hot, humid summer night. Jeff Bell of PDT in Manhattan's East Village was making a whiskey punch that night, and I asked him to give us some tips on making a summertime whiskey cocktail.
Whiskey is an extremely versatile spirit, even Scotch whiskey. Giving it length with beer or soda is a good way to start. You want something that's like tall and refreshing. Citrus is a great component. Herbs and floral components add as well. Tall whiskey highball with a sprig of mint is just a great, you know, whiskey soda with a sprig of mint on the top is one of my favorite things to drink in the summertime. If you think you do whiskey and soda, it's almost like recreating what beer is. You know, it's taking it down to a lower ABV. It's refreshing. It's crisp. It's bubbly. Scotch has a little bit of a floral note to it. You can play off that. Integrating different seasonal fruits. Bourbon whiskey tastes great with watermelon. So you think of the different pairings you can do and utilize a fruit as the summer goes on.
How would you use it, say, in a punch? I know you made a punch tonight with Johnny Walker. How would you do that?
So I serve a punch at the bar. We do it in a cocktail format, but it's a punch style drink. We do lemon and grapefruit, and we do a lemon and grapefruit oleosacrum, which is essentially a sugar syrup where you let the peels of the lemon and grapefruit steep in sugar. And the sugar extracts the oils and essentially infuses those bright citrus notes and bitter citrus notes into the sugar. You add your citrus juice into that, a little bit of water, and that's your oleosacrum. Mix that with a little bit of scotch and beer. You have a tall, refreshing whiskey cocktail for the summertime. And it's not super high in alcohol content, so you can have a few of them and not really feel the effects as much. Something you want to do in the summertime is you reach for something that's refreshing and you can have a lot of and not, you know, feel all the alcoholic repercussions.
And you can also do that as a shandy too, right?
Correct, yeah. It's very similar to a shandy.
What other cocktails can you make with whiskey in the summertime that are refreshing without being too heavy?
I think the key to keeping whiskey refreshing is using citrus. Lemon works really well with whiskey. I don't particularly love lime with whiskey, but lemon and grapefruit are great citruses to work into whiskey cocktails for the summer. One of my favorites is a Gold Rush with whiskey, lemon, and honey, equal parts. You can do a smash whiskey, muddled lemon and mint, a little bit of sugar. It's almost like a whiskey mojito. So you can keep in with the bright citrus fruits, give it length. That's a good way to start.
Do some kinds of whiskeys work better than others?
I would say it's all the whiskeys would be to a personal preference. Today I was mixing with Double Black, which is pretty smoky. Sometimes people drink more bourbon in the summertime, you know, in juleps, that kind of thing. So it really depends on your palate. I like, I like Scotch, single malt Scotch neat. I like blended Scotch and cocktails. I know I'm not anti single malts in cocktails, just a little less cost effective. Bourbon's a little lighter because it's made in a column still rather than a pot still. So there's a little lighter in body, it's easier to work into a summer program.
I've posted Jeff's 1-2 punch recipe on the cocktail collection page at WhiskeyCast.com with options for making it by the bowl for a party or by the glass. You'll find the cocktail collection in the pub section at WhiskeyCast.com. That's also where you'll find a searchable list of my tasting notes for more than 1,200 different whiskeys, links for WhiskeyCast HD and WhiskeyCast Virtual Tastings episodes, the latest whiskey news, and much more. You can follow me on Facebook and Twitter at WhiskeyCast, and my email address for your questions and suggestions is comments@WhiskeyCast.com.
WhiskeyCast. Proudly brought to you by Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Join the stillhouse at singlepotstill.com.
Whiskey Cast is a production of Cask Strength Media, copyright 2014, and comes to you each week from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.